All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Welcome back to a Friday episode of Dropping the Gloves. John, this is a little bit different. You don't usually hear me do the intro, but where are you calling from and why am I leading this one?
A little lackluster, I'll give you that. You got to be a little more enthusiastic. I'm downstate Detroit area. I'm doing a couple talks. I did one last night and I'm doing one today over in Jackson, Michigan. So I'm on the road. My wife let me leave the house, but I'm heading back tonight. So it was just a quick trip. Two talks, two nights. Back in Traverse City tomorrow or tonight.
Are you going to give us a little preview of what your talk's about, or is that something personal?
Well, no, I don't care. It's kind of motivational, kind of faith-based. Obviously, I'm Catholic. It's a big part of my life. And I do talks around the country, I guess you could say, on my faith and how I kind of see my live my life. And obviously, my story plays a part in it, being the NHL MVP. So it's interesting. I just talked to a business group last night at Legatus, and tonight I'm talking to Knights of Columbus. It's just a men's group. It's a Father's Day type deal because Father's Day is tomorrow. And we'll see how it goes. I just spew just good stuff people want to hear and learn from me, Tim. I guess that's what it is. But mostly they just want to hear about fights. So I just, it evolves slowly but surely into me talking about my fights.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. My grandpa was in the Knights. He loved it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into some hockey stuff. Before we do, this episode is brought to you by Bet365. Proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account with Bet365 today. Bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use promo code HOCKEYCA, all caps HOCKEYCA, wherever you are in the world, HOCKEYCA. So, John, game three last night. The Panthers won, obviously, 4-3. It was 4-1 for a good chunk of time. It kind of felt like this game was getting out of hand. The Oilers battled back late, but it wasn't enough. Let's start at the beginning. The big story going into this one was Barkov. How healthy was he? Does he have a concussion issues? Did they have jaw issues? Was he going to wear a bubble, whatever? He not only played, but he had one of the best playoff games of his postseason so far. Just dominant in all facets of the ice, as he usually is. He creates a turnover to score that first goal. He had a goal and an assist. They opened the scoring based on that turnover from at the blue line by Bouchard, which we've heard before. Bouchard has had an issue with that the entire postseason. We're going to talk about that. But Barkov forces the rush back to Forsling. Beautiful kind of slap pass to Reinhardt in the back of the net. The Panthers get one in the first. And then opening in the second period early, Vogel scores on a breakaway of all people. And you kind of feel like the building came back to life. It was all Panthers in the first. You think, here we go again. And he scores like less than 2 minutes into the second, and you kind of feel the building's rocking, they're back in it. And I thought at that point, maybe the game's starting to turn, where this is where the Oilers take over, they battle back and try to get back into the series. But the Panthers in the second period scored three goals in about 6 minutes and change, sucked the life out of the building. It was just goal after goal after goal, a turnover from Skinner turned to that Tarasenko goal. You get another turnover for the Bennett goal, and away they go. So it was 4-1 after two, and the Oilers get a couple of late goals to make it a game. Again, building's buzzing again. You kind of feel there's a comeback mounting, but they just ran out of time. And they were playing really well with the empty net, especially. You kind of feel like another 2-3 minutes, they might have scored and tied it up, but they didn't. And now Florida's up 3-0 in the series. What were your thoughts on the game last night?
Lots to unpack there, Tim. You really ripped through the whole game quite quickly. Let's back it up. I feel like the first period was the Oilers' best period. I know game one, they had a huge shot differential. I felt like they were playing good in the first period. It was evenly matched. They were getting chances. They were limiting Florida's chances. I think that late goal in the last minute was a backbreaker. It was huge. Bouchard trying to do too much at the blue line. You can't do that. It's 4-on-4. This is your pedigree. You have to just either live the fight another day and go back into the neutral zone and regroup or get the puck deep, especially when you're being hounded by Sasha Barkov, who is one of, if not the best, two-way forwards in the league who can go from defense to offense better than everybody. We saw it there. It's just, it's a mistake that shouldn't happen. And this game was stamped by mistakes by the Edmonton Oilers giving Florida Panthers their goals. The first three goals should not have happened. It's a turnover by Bouchard. It's a bad play behind the net by Skinner. And it's a turnover by Darnell Nurse in front of the net. Both turnovers by the defense are made possible because the Florida Panthers are hounding them on the forecheck. If the Florida Panthers aren't so aggressive, aren't so in your face, the Oilers have a chance to control both pucks, either break it out in Nurse's case or get a shot at it in Bouchard's case. So it's just the presence of Florida's unrelenting pressure leads to goals for the Florida Panthers. And it's 3-1, 4-1, and then you're out of the game altogether.
Yeah, it was tough. And, you know, you give them credit for battling back in a way that they hadn't really done that. They've lost the first couple of games by a few goals, and you feel like, okay, they're fighting, they're showing signs of life, but it's not the top players. It's the depth guys, which we're going to get into. So kind of my main segment, what I want to spend the chunk on this episode on, is reasons that the Oilers are down 3-0. And a lot of it last night you saw, the first one is the power play. Absolutely brutal. They went 0-for-3 again last night, which makes them 0-for-10 on the series. I mean, how can you predict that when you enter it? Everything that Edmonton had going their way was the power play was at the top of that list. And I was watching last night, and one thing the Panthers do so well, in addition to Bobrovsky and blocking shots and all that, is keeping the Oilers on the perimeter. They're going the D to D. They're on the face-off dots outside the circle behind the net. They can't get anything going, any scoring chances in front of the net. And that's one of the things that makes them so effective.
And they have active sticks. You watch their sticks. They're always in the lane. I know we talked about it last show or the show before. Darnell Nurse's stick's always at his waist. It's never on the ice. You watch the Panthers. As soon as the faceoff goes, if the Oilers win it, Barkov's stick is on stick to puck. He's poking pucks away. He's getting in passing lanes. If the Panthers win it, Ekblad's on the puck right away. He's rimming it out. They're so incredibly detailed on those little things. And then you put that with the pressure. It's constant pressure. Always, 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 always. It's a tough pill to get anything going against. You really have to have some of that Colorado type movement where the D-man's going behind the net, the forwards are up at the top. You have to have confusion and unpredictability, because if you are killing against the Edmonton Oilers, you know what they like to do. It's either Draisaitl on the back door, it's McDavid cutting through the middle, you're shooting and distributing. It's a dynamic power play, but it's very predictable. And I know Chris Knobloch and Connor McDavid said going into game three, we have to switch it up a little bit. We have to be more unpredictable. That's easy to do when it's the first or second or third week of the season and you're just trying to set your power play. We're 7 months into the season. You can't just all of a sudden say, oh yeah, no, we're going to be unpredictable now. That's what we're going to do. It doesn't work. You know what you're going to do. You program to do it. You've done it a million times throughout the season. And the Florida Panthers just have your number. And then to put a cherry on top of it, when they do get a good chance, when McDavid does go backdoor to Draisaitl or McDavid gets a backdoor chance, Bobrovsky is so good. His pushing across, his side to side, is unmatched. And what I noticed this game, he is so square to the puck, Tim, when he comes across. A lot of goalies, they'll dive across and they make an incredible save. The puck will bounce off them into the net. Bob, when he comes across, he squares his chest and it hits him in his chest and just drops right at his feet. It's such a hard thing to do. It doesn't look difficult, but going side to side, east to west, and bringing your whole body with you, it's quite a talent that not a lot of goalies have, and he does it every single time. And Draisaitl, he doesn't. You watch him. You'll get a shot. It should be in the back of the net, and it's just laying at Bob's feet, and he's just like dumbfounded. How do I score on this guy?
Yeah, that's a good point. The second thing I have here on my list of reasons is the Oilers, on the flip side, are not doing a good job protecting the front of their net. This has been an issue for them for the entire series, and I know some of these are like fluke turnovers that, you know, the defenseman doesn't know the puck's going to be there, like the Tarasenko goal last night. But even the Reinhardt goal from Sam Bennett in game two, like, it's an issue. Rodriguez, like, all these guys are just not protecting the front of their net, and they're getting in front of it, and they're getting scoring chances untouched. It's happened the entire thing, and the Oilers are just not adjusting to it.
Well, yeah, the first three goals of this game were all within 5 feet of the net, and they're all Either turnovers, all of them, yes, but it's just goals that could be prevented if you just get your head on a swivel. And I don't want to get on Darnell Nurse because a lot of times it's him. It's just he seems to be puck watching. And I think that's a theme for all these goals. They're so focused on the puck and they need to just realize who's behind me, what's going on, because it's not the guy who has the puck who's going to score. It's the guy back door. It's the rebound. It's this and that. That's what Florida prides himself on. How did they beat Boston last year? How did they make a run to the Stanley Cup Finals? Just stroll on the net and get rebounds. This is not something new that they do, and I think Edmonton's just blowing it. They really are. You have to pick up a guy, put him on his behind, or else you're going to be down 3-1, 4-1, and you just look like fools because you're standing there and the guy beside you is picking up a goal.
Yeah, okay. Reason number three, turnovers. Evan, we talked about this one already. Evan Bouchard has had three or four major costly turnovers already in this series that have turned into Florida goals. He's the biggest culprit, I think, but he's not the only one. This has been an issue for the entire team, especially the defense. It showed its ugly face again last night. How do they control themselves? Is it their fault, or is it just a result of how effective Florida is on the forecheck?
It's the forecheck. It really is. And you watch a lot of the turnovers is them going back for pucks and just trying to get it out of the zone. Broberg had a bad one last night. Nurse has had him. Bouchard's had him. They're just throwing it up the boards and hoping that either their forward chips it out or just gets out somehow. And the Panthers they just thrive on that. They have two guys going hard on the forecheck. And the other two guys, it's a forward and a D-man, they're just waiting. They're poaching. They're like, okay, which side are you going to go? And as soon as they go to one or the other sides, they're going. They're not hesitating, and they're driving down the half boards, and they're picking off passes, and away they go. You saw Tkachuk pick one off there this past game and had a nice cross-ice play to Reinhardt, who had a great shot. But the Panthers thrive on that. They turn over as defense to offense, and it happens in every single zone, whether it's the offensive zone or the defensive zone. They pick passes off, and they just braid away to the offense. So it's just the unrelenting pressure that the Panthers have on these Edmonton Oilers. It's hard to manage. And the Oilers obviously are failing. They're turning it over way too much, and it's ending up in the back of the net.
Yeah, I think the Bennett goal especially showcased that, because it was just like the puck's in the corner, they're on him. They try to work it behind the net, they're on him. They're trying to get out of their own zone, they're on him, they're on him, they're on him. Poking the puck away, lifting the stick, everything, turning into offense. It's relentless. Okay, we talked about the power play stinks. Two, not protecting the front of their net. Three, turnovers. Four, and this is a tough one because I don't think it's his fault, and certainly games one and two we didn't blame him, but I think he deserves some blame for last night, is Stuart Skinner. A couple of those goals didn't even touch, like the Barkov one. I know he's an elite scorer, I know he's in the slot like that, but you didn't even touch the puck. It just found twine, you know what I mean, right under his arm. There's a couple other goals like that. I don't know, I just feel like this is something that he deserves a little bit more blame for last night's performance than he did for the first couple.
Yeah, and he's not an elite goaltender. I think that's well documented. He will never win a Vezina. He is just he's a good goalie. But when you watch the other guy on the other side of the net, the other side of the ice, excuse me, he's been beat clean once this whole series. And I think it was this game with Kulak. Kulak was the only guy to beat him clean. I know Ekholm beat him, but it went through him. It was a fluke goal.
Vogel too.
Other than the Kulak goal, he's been lights out. He's faced breakaways. He's faced cross ice, one back doors. He's faced every type of shot, and he's saved them. And Skinner's been good. And don't get me wrong, I've always said, I prided myself on, you can win a Stanley Cup strong down the middle, good back end, and an okay goaltender. I think the Edmonton Oilers check two of those boxes. Where they're lacking is the defense. And it's just apparent this series, their defense is not up to the task. You look at the Florida Panthers, they have the luxury of having an elite goaltender. They're very strong down the middle, and they have a very strong back end. So they check all the boxes, and then some with the dynamic wingers. So I don't blame Stuart Skinner. I think he's played as well as expected. He hasn't lost them any games. He certainly hasn't won them any games, but he's played good. He kept them in game two when they were just getting outplayed, hands down. So if there's blame to be placed, which there definitely is, it falls at the feet, much like the New York Rangers, much like Tampa Bay Lightning and all these other teams, Carolina Hurricanes. It falls at the feet of the guys who make $12, $8, $9 million not producing, and that's Connor McDavid. I know he skates around a lot, Tim, and it looks sexy, and his miles skated on the ice is 10 miles he skated tonight. You got one assist, bro. It's not good enough. It really is not good enough. You're getting outscored by Warren Fogle. So that's the issue.
That's my fifth and final point, is the Stars aren't scoring. Here are the Oilers' goal scorers in this series: Ekholm, Fogle, Broberg, and McLeod. That is unacceptable. Where's McDavid? Where's Draisaitl? Where's the Nuge? Hyman? Like, is, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. And obviously, you have to give a lot of credit to Florida. But, like, you would think last night was the game where those guys show up. Down to nothing. You're playing at home. You know what's on the line. And you get blanked again. It's just, it's inexplicable.
It's funny to hear the announcers every time Evan Bouchard gets a shot. The Bouch bomb, 97 miles an hour, blocked. The Bouch bomb, 94 miles an hour, missed to net. Oh, Bouch bomb again, 95 miles an hour, blocked. He never gets his shots through. The Florida Panthers are very good at taking away grade A opportunities. And I know these guys aren't scoring, but there's a reason for it. This is elite defensive play by the Florida Panthers. They're controlling the center of the ice, like you said. They're giving them chances, but it's all backdoor. It's very hard passes. You really have to make a solid play to get a good scoring chance. And at the end of the day, they can't do it. It's a constant, like, masterclass of defense by the Florida Panthers. They're playing as a team, and they're just the better team, Tim, at this point.
Yeah, which kind of brings me to the quote from Knobloch after the game last night, which I thought was just bizarre. He said in his post-game presser, quote, "I think that we've shown that we can beat this team." As a friend of the show, Pete Blackburn, tweeted that, "I think you've shown the exact opposite." Like, where is that information coming from that you feel like you, and I know, I get that, you know, he's trying to inspire some confidence, say, we're not out of it, we're a good team, whatever. You have not shown that you can beat this team. You have barely even been close.
It's, well, what is he supposed to say? Well, I get where Pete's coming from. Like, you live in a reality and you haven't shown anything. You have to instill some kind of confidence in the team. We were down when I was in Chicago, 3-0 to the Vancouver Canucks. Number one seed in the West. We limped into the playoffs. We had injuries. It was an issue. We go down 3-0. In the locker room, it was just, let's just win the next one. Because Edmonton could have won game one. That they maybe should have won game one. Florida squeaked it out. Bobrovsky stole that game. Game three could have gone either way. First period, I feel like, was really good for Edmonton. Florida held in there. They had some power plays. It was that six-minute stretch that cost them with some turnovers. If you take that six-minute stretch out of the way, it could have been anybody's game. And McLeod missed a point-blank chance after they went 4-3. He should have probably scored that goal to make it 4-4. So you have to look at the positives. And, like, I don't know, what's Knobloch going to say? It's a Stanley Cup Finals. It's game four. Do you want him to go to the podium and be like, oh, my gosh, it's over? These guys are so good. Like, we're done. He has to instill some confidence in his team. And the team's going to hear that, and they have to just win one game. I know people dog on McDavid, myself included. He says all the right things. He gets up there and does his interviews. He's like, we just want to win one. Like, we have to win one. And that's what we did in Chicago. We won the first one. All of a sudden, you start to get some confidence, and you're like, well, gosh, win the next one. It's 3-2. Like, this thing might not be out of reach. And then all of a sudden, it's 3-2, and it's like, man, we could take this to game seven. And then all of a sudden, Vancouver's getting nervous. And then they're feeling the pressure. Then we win game six. And it's like, well, now we're going to game seven. Now it's anybody's game. And we lose in overtime because Chris Campoli turns it over. But it's just a situation where you have to take any kind of positives away from this. And I know it sounds silly what he's saying, but I get what he's doing. They have to try. I like what he did as a coach, too. I like that he's mixing up the first line. He tried Corey Perry on the first line. He tried McLeod on the first line. Vogel got, I think, a cup of coffee up there. So he's trying to mix it up to try to generate some offense for these guys and to have a more balanced attack. So it's not like he's not trying. He just doesn't have the players.
Yeah, and again, this is just, I mean, the Panthers are just a buzzsaw. This is the latest team to run into them. Like, look what they did at every single round. And ironically, I think the Bruins were the closest one to really give
them. Don't you dare.
But even they weren't close. You know what I mean? Like, they were closer than the Rangers and the Lightning and right now the Oilers. But the Panthers are just that good. They're that good. So, all right, I want to move on to some other stuff because there's so much other hockey news. But anything else on this game last night before we do?
No, I just think it was the Florida's almost coming out party. I think everyone thought Edmonton was going to bounce back and win game three, and Florida came in there. Even after having travel delays and issues getting to Edmonton, that kind of puts a hiccup in your preparation for your game, your routine. Nobody likes that as a player. Sitting on the tarmac, some guys work for hours and hours and hours. They dominated Tim. For all intents and purposes, they came out and they dominated this game. Edmonton had a lead push in the last 10 minutes of the third, but it was over after the second period. You're up 4-1, so I think what we're seeing now, I don't want to say the start of a dynasty, But you look at their contracts, you look at how these guys line up for the next 4 or 5 years. These guys could have a run. Like, this is a good team. They're well coached. They seem to be playing the right way to win multiple Stanley Cups. And it's if I'm the NHL, I'm nervous by how this is going, because they have, like you said, they walked through this playoffs. There has not been anybody who has given them any sort of a problem in these playoffs. And they're not old. The oldest guy on this team is Okposo, and he does nothing for them. Bobrovsky is, what, 34, 35? So that might be the biggest issue, but he doesn't show any signs of slowing down. This could be a wagon, like you like to say, for the NHL for years to come.
Hey, John, do you like frozen pucks?
Well, on the ice, I do, yeah.
They're awesome when they're in the back of the other guy's net, but that doesn't mean you want to eat one. That's why Wendy's only ever uses fresh beef that's never seen the inside of a freezer in all of their burgers. Whether you order a Baconator, Dave's Single, or even a JBC, you'll only ever find real fresh beef that's real juicy and loaded with fresh toppings. So download the Wendy's app, check out the latest deals, and order a burger that's only job is being delicious. Bunch of quick hits here. There's so much hockey news. There's so much to talk about, which is why we kind of rushed through that game a little bit. But the first one here, Patrick Laine, quote-unquote, wants a fresh start. Both sides, meaning him and the team.
Shocker.
Yeah. They're working out a deal, working on a trade, according to Pierre LeBrun, which means it's real. It's gospel. So a lot of teams that make sense with a lot of teams that have the cap room that need a goal scorer. The two that jump out to me are the Sharks and the Blackhawks, because they've got the young players that need talent around them. They've got the cap room. Laine could be a 30-40 goal scorer in the right situation again if he stays healthy, but he hasn't played more than like 53 games or scored 30 goals in like 5 years at this point. So I don't know. Tim, are you knocking on that door now?
I don't want to disagree with you. I know this is, you're running this show. This is your ship. If I'm Mike Greer or Kyle Davidson and I have Macklin Calabrini and Connor Bedard, I'm trying to groom these guys in the NHL, teach them how to do it the right way. Do you think I would allow Patrick Laine into that locker room, who has been nothing but an issue wherever he's gone? You think it would allow him around those young guys to just instill his wise greatness on them? Hey, Patrick, how do we work out? How do we prepare for the game? And he goes, I don't know. I just go to the one spot, try to score. Are we going to do extra workouts after the game? No. Why? We got our bag. We're good. Not a chance. That would be a good idea for any of those teams. I think Patrick Laine has a spot where he can succeed. It's a team that has vets that will keep him in and keep him motivated and keep him accountable, but it's not a team with young guys. I don't think that would be a wise move by either of those teams. I think he goes to a Colorado, a team like that that needs a goal scorer. They can slide him in the second line with the first line power play, make a difference. That makes sense for me, other than a team that's just young. I get what you're saying. They have the money. He could go in there and get a prominent position on the wing, and you score some goals with these young, dynamic guys. But if you're trying to mold these guys to be the face of your franchise, no, thank you.
I mean, there are other guys in that room that can do those things you're talking about, like the teaching them, setting an example. You don't need that from every player and every star player. You know what I mean? Like, Laine can just go and score goals, and he's gonna be better than anyone else on the Blackhawks roster in terms of helping Bedard produce and flourish on the ice.
It's funny how that works is, and this might insult some people, but if you could put 10 great guys in a locker room, star-studded, just really top-notch, high-moral, high-value guys in a locker room, you plant one seed, cancer seed, in that locker room, it ruins the whole locker room. I've seen it on many, many teams where it just takes one guy to just ruin everything. He makes fun of guys for going out too early. He shows up to meetings late. He just does things the wrong way. It just bleeds into everything else. So, and I'm not saying Patrick Laine does that, but from what I've heard, he does. So it's sad because he's such an elite talent. Like, he's got all the gifts, and he will go and score 40 goals when he's put in the right situation. But I would not let him anywhere near my young kids ever if I was a GM.
Maybe he goes to a Carolina if they're looking to replace Gensel, if they can't recoup him, or Pittsburgh or something. And like you said, fit on a team that doesn't need a leadership role from him.
I tell you where he's not going, Tim. It's probably Philadelphia. I don't think he's going to go and have a second round with Torts. But although he would probably fit in nicely there. They need goal scoring in Philly, so he would work well there.
I saw a report that Konechny wants like 11 or 12 million or something stupid.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, no, he's the superstar.
Yeah, the next one here. Elliot Friedman says Sheldon Keefe was extremely careful about how he treated Marner because of how sensitive Marner is. We all knew that, but I've not seen it in writing before, and Elliot Friedman doesn't report what's not real. So I thought that was worth pointing out.
So here's my question to you. Are you helping Mitch Marner by feeding into his weakness?
No, of course not.
Because it is a weakness. Like if you're sensitive, and there's a time and a place to be sensitive. Not in my life. But for some people, there's a time and a place. Why coddle that? Why lean into that? Why not just force him to tough it up? Like, suck it up. Let's go challenge him. Because in the NHL, do you think it gets easier? You know, as you progress in the playoffs, as you get older in your career, you're making more money, you're more responsible, you're expected of more. You're a superstar, Mitch Marner. Like, you have to grow a thick skin. And if your coach is just like, I got to be careful what I say to Mitch. I know he's going to go into one of those funks and be upset at me. That is that the trait you want in your top player? No, you have to weed that out and thicken that skin. Yeah, I think Keith missed the mark there by playing into that because it's a weakness, man. Like it's pathetic.
I always go back to the Stamkos example in conversations like this in my mind, and he was not critiqued, and he shouldn't have been the same level that Marner was early in his career, but he was like a soft touch, kind of a soft player, and maybe, you know, tough. We all remember he came back when he was had his nose broken in the playoffs and didn't only miss like one shift or whatever, but it was just like he was more focused on scoring goals, and he changed the way that he played. Less offense, more complete, more responsibility. And he started winning championships because of it. You know what I mean? And Marner maybe could take that step, but doesn't sound like he's interested in that. So
I think the thing for Marner is, and I know it would be next to impossible, is to just unplug him from anything social. Because it feels to me that he's so concerned what everybody thinks about him, whatever he does, his image, his brand. He doesn't want to ruin it. He wants everyone to like him. You have to let that ship sail. If you want to leave Toronto, just go. If you want to stay, just say it. Don't worry what everyone's saying. I think he's so concerned about the public's just thoughts about him. It ruins him. You play a bad game, you're reading the comments, you're reading the papers, all this crap. Just unplug, man. Get rid of Instagram, Twitter, all that crap, and I think he would be better for it, but he won't be able to.
Yeah. The next big announcement, the Blues announced yesterday that Alexander Steen will become the team's new GM in 2026. He signed a five-year contract. He's going to work as a special assistant to Doug Armstrong for the next 2 years, and then Doug Armstrong will kind of oversee him as president of hockey operations. So a planned succession plan built into place. It's going to be an easy transition over the course of several years, and Steen's going to take over that job long-term. I have never, I mean, I don't know of this before. I've never seen this kind of thing where it's that far planned out. Do you think this is a good thing for the Blues?
I don't know anything about Alexander Steen. Like, so I guess he's getting on the job trading, which would be good. Who knows? I think Derek Stepan, he was trying to do that with Minnesota when we talked to him, right? He's going to get a touch of all the spots in the franchise and see where he lands. But it's becoming more and more common for players to just kind of start in the industry, in the organization, work around and work their way up. But who cares? St. Louis, I like St. Louis. They're a good franchise. They seem to know what they're doing. So this is a good plan rather than just handing the reins to a kid who knows nothing. So I actually think this is a smart move by them.
We'll do a couple quick ones here. The Sharks have hired Ryan Warsawski as their new head coach. First time as a full NHL head coach. He's been in the minor system. His brother, David, played in the NHL. I think he was in the Olympics at one point. So a new face there.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, finally. The Carolina Hurricanes have agreed to an extension with UFA defenseman Jalen Chatfield, 3 years, $3 million. That's one of the major pieces that they had. Still a lot to figure out, but I'm a little bit surprised that usually you kind of get the priority ones first and then figure out how much money you have left. So the fact that they signed him first means they really value him.
Yep.
And then the last one here, the Rangers re-up Kaapo Kakko to a 1 year deal, $2.4 million, which is exactly what his qualifying offer would have been. They re-up him from one more year. What do you hope from him at this point?
So I don't have Cap Friendly in front of me. Will this bring him to age 24? So he'll still be an RFA after this year, or will he be a UFA? I don't know how this works long-term for him contract structure-wise, but It makes sense. It's not a bad number. It works for both teams. You get them for another year. Try to unlock the enigma that is Capocacco. Can we make this guy into a really solid offensive NHL player? I think he's, you know, he's not terrible. He's a good third, fourth line guy to have. But if you're watching the Florida Panthers, third line's got to put some points on the board. They have to be effective. They can't just disappear for stretches at a time. You look at Lundell and Mustarainen. They're fantastic.
Right.
So he'll always be a disappointment. He's a second overall pick.
23 years old, so it'll bring him to 24. Hopefully you get 20 goals for him. That'd be nice.
It's a good play. They're kicking the can down the road and trying to see if they can figure something out. And if it doesn't, then you can't say they didn't try. They've invested into this guy a long time. This will be, what, 6 years now with the New York Rangers? It's a long time.
We got the official announcement yesterday that the Utah Hockey Club will be that'll be its name for the next season. I think probably just a one-year thing while they figure out something long-term. Their jersey and colors are also very simple, very clean. I don't hate the way they look, but there's no like flair or personality to it. Definitely a bridge name and a bridge jersey situation. And again, they'll have a name announced at some point during the year, but Utah Hockey Club is where they're starting.
Did they say that they will have a name? Is this just temporary?
Yeah, it was a one-year thing, I believe.
So it makes me think that they're going to go out and license all the names of the name that they selected. And they have to, because the Yeti thing still, to me, because of Yeti, the cooler company, that one would cause concerns. If either I'm the company owner of Yeti, I don't know how that works, licensing brands and trademarks and all that stuff. So maybe Yeti won and they have to figure something out.
Right. The last thing here, this is a cool little fact. The Boston Celtics and Florida Panthers are both obviously on the verge of winning with a sweep. The last time this happened for both the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Final, each 4-0, was 1995, so 20 years. And that was the Houston Rockets and the New Jersey Devils. John, do you think when we come back on Monday, will the series be over?
Oh, boy. No, I think Edmonton will. And I said this on Monday or Wednesday. I said Florida will win game three, Edmonton will win game four. I'm sticking by that. I think this will go six games. I think Edmonton will lose on home ice in game six. But who knows? If they need to score a power play goal. I think that if they get one, that'll be a game changer. They'll win the game until then. It's just their power play is not – it's dangerous. You just can't score. But no, what do you think? Do you think it'll be over on Monday?
Yeah, I do. I think it's over. I think Florida's just shown me too much to think that they're going to lose this. And I hope it's not. I hope it's not. I hope the Celtics sweep tonight. But yeah, I think Florida's going to do it.
You feel bad for Connor McDavid. His interviews, he always looks so sad. Like he's just angry and sad and just frustrated by the questions. What do you feel for him at all?
I mean, no. His bank account looks pretty good, as you like to say, right? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I empathize with his frustration, but so much of it is just that he's so good and he's frustrated that other people aren't as good as he is. And, you know, there's only so much he can do, but no, I don't worry about Connor McDavid.
This is an off-season question, but we've talked about it before. He has 1 year left on his contract. Does this impact his future home for the Edmonton Oilers? Because this is the furthest they've got and they're just getting their PP whacked. Like they are really getting worked in the Stanley Cup final. I think if it wasn't apparent to him now, it has to be. His defense is an issue, and there's zero depth. And that's always been the case for them. And this year they tried to address it, and it's still not good enough. And this is the best defense they've had. This is the most depth that they've had, and it's still nowhere near good enough. Do you think he finally just says, I got to go somewhere else?
While you were talking, I was thinking about Darnell Nurse. It's like it's not his fault he's not better than he is. But he signed the contract at a time where you thought he was going to be. And I don't think you can win with a $9+ million defenseman just not playing up to par. And so, like, it's not only Nurse's fault that they're in this place, but I feel like if you look at that, he's like, I can't win if that's our number one defenseman. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Imagine, like, 2 years from now, Draisaitl and McDavid both gone, and they've still got Nurse as their top paid player.
Now, you mentioned San Jose and Chicago with money. That's where those guys should go. That's where they will end up, playing with a young star to help them. You have a lot of money to spend. The salary cap's raising. That makes a lot of sense. those guys going into that mark, and how devastating would it be for Edmonton in a matter of 2 years to have the two best players on the planet and then they're both gone? But you could get some pretty, you could get some pretty good players in return for them at the deadline. Imagine that deadline. If all of a sudden McDavid's on the market, it's like, we got to trade him. He's not re-signing. The return for him would be incredible.
Is it worth giving up Bedard to get McDavid? Is it only worth
No. You can't do that. But you would have to get what's the most first rounders you can trade? Three?
Probably. Yeah.
It'd be incredible haul to get that guy, because he's in his prime. He's like 26. He's still got a lot of miles on those tires. So Edmonton, man, lots of big questions coming up, more so than game four. Are they going to win? But that's it. You finish this up, Tim.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening. Hopefully we have more hockey to talk about when we come back on Monday. John, drive safe. Have fun. Speak from the heart. Believe in yourself. We believe in you.
Oh, thanks, you guys. I appreciate it. All right. Are you going to do the ending, Tim?
Yeah, how do you usually end it? Thanks for listening. Come back on Monday. Cheers.
See you next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Bye.